everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I am the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as its founder and CEO. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. Well, this month is my favorite month of the year for our broadcast, because what we call July is Sped Homeschool Awareness Month. So we share community stories with you, just of parents who have been or are in the trenches and lessons they have learned that they can share with you. And I have a 28-year homeschool veteran here today. I am super, super excited for you to hear all that she has to share. And I told her, I said, I got to keep the questions limited, because I think we could talk till midnight and you would still be learning something new. But Sherry, thank you so much for joining us and just your willingness to share your story and the curveballs that God has allowed to come into your life through your homeschooling season.
Yes. Well, I'm really glad to be here, and I'm super glad that we've become friends instead of just email buddies. We actually are in-person friends now.
Yes. Sherry invited me, it was, a couple months ago, I think we got to meet in person, and we just had an instant bond, which is great. You know, other homeschooling moms, they get you, they've been through the same struggles as you have been, and it's just, it develops that those deep ties, and Sherry has already become a dear friend in just a very short period of time. So I'm so glad that God crossed our paths. So I would just, I see we are already getting comments. Creative Minds Homeschooling says hi. Welcome to the broadcast. And if you are watching, and I see we have viewers popping on everywhere, just know that you can comment in the feed if you're watching on Facebook or our Facebook page, that is, or YouTube. If you're watching in the Facebook support group, just know that you have to give permission to StreamYard to post your comments, because that is a private group. But we would love to know where you're from, any questions that you have. We'd love to be able to discuss those, as well as the things that we have on our sheets. Let's kick things off and get started, and then we'll just see where the conversation goes. But Sherry, I would love for you to start out by just telling us a little bit about your family and how your homeschooling journey began.
Sure, I'd love to share that. First of all, hopefully people won't pass out when I say I have 11 kids. When I married my husband, I inherited my stepson, and then we went on to have 5 children by the old-fashioned birth way. Yes. And then later in time, we adopted 5 children. 2 of my 11 children are deceased and waiting for me in heaven, and I'll be glad to see them then. But we started homeschooling when we lived in a nice little neighborhood in Denver called Montclair. My son was in second grade there, and he came home from school one day and said, "I hate school. I'm never going back." And I'm like, "Okay, what happened?" You know, and he, you know, he's the strong, silent type, so he was not going to share anything.
Okay, yeah.
And so, after a few weeks, I finally went and met with the principal, who's a friend of mine, and she said, "Well, we think he probably kind of had a nervous breakdown, because there was this embarrassing thing that happened in class." So they tested him, and he was both gifted, but he also was learning delayed. And so she said, "There's this new thing called homeschooling." This was in the mid-1990s. Called homeschooling that we think that your family would really enjoy, and it'd be super good for him. And you could just homeschool him for the rest of the year, and then, you know, he can enter back into school. Well, we loved it so much, and he thrived. And the next son, who was going to start kindergarten that year, we thought, well, he'd be in the principal's office every day. Because he was just this curious kid, you know. And anyway, so we started homeschooling, and we just never looked back. And so After living in Colorado for 45 years and becoming a widow 9 years ago, I just finished graduating my youngest child from homeschool. Yeah. And so I now live in the Fort Myers, Florida area, and I just really enjoy it. And I have the freedom to travel and do different things, especially to visit my three grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'll have more. Yes. Yeah. And so I love homeschooling. I told my parents, I wish they had homeschooled me if they'd known about it. Mm. In the 90s. So it's a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you also for giving us hope that there is an end. I think oftentimes we think about this, I'm going to be doing this the rest of my life. And with 11 kids, you did it for a long time and there was still an end. So the hope is there.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Colorado, Rob Harris from Grand Junction said hi. He's watching the show on Facebook.
Great.
So, yeah. Well, that's awesome. I thank you for that introduction. And yeah, it's a long journey, so there's a lot to share. But so what type of training did you have when you started homeschooling? And how did you navigate teaching things that you at first had no idea? How am I going to teach this?
Right. And I think that's a big thing that parents are like, well, I have no training. I'm not a teacher. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do this. And there's mm-hmm. no way I can do it. Well, I was just one of those parents too. You know, I had a decent public school education and a college degree. And, mm-hmm. but yet I didn't know how to actually sit down and teach my kids. So right. I think in reflecting, really the best training was that I had wonderful parents. They're actually still alive. And they gave me an idyllic childhood that included a lot of enrichment activities, art and music, and we had political discussions around the dinner table. Mm-hmm. And they showed me that learning was more than just a textbook. Yeah. And they still are avid readers. I mean, they both read like a book a week. And so my training was really just growing up in a family that loved learning. Right. And I married a man who grew up in a similar family. And so he and I loved learning. And we decided when we started homeschooling that, the internet was just kind of coming around, but you didn't have it like on
your
phone.
Oh, yeah. No.
It was in a big box on your desk.
Right, exactly.
The dial-up thing. But so I went to the Tattered Cover bookstore in downtown, Cherry Creek area of Denver, and they actually had a shelf about homeschooling, and I bought a couple of the books about, what the idea of homeschooling is and why institutional school isn't the best for a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. And so I just started reading, and then we just jumped in. And I got some used curriculum and I don't know where I got it from because I didn't know anybody that was homeschooling, but I think I also just went to Costco and bought some workbooks, so we just started. And thankfully our biological children were just curious kids who love to learn and none of them were early readers. So I really had to learn how to teach reading. Yeah. And so I did a lot of research in books, but also as the internet came on and you could start researching. And I thought, I'm just going to teach my kids the way I like to learn. And that's hands-on and reading aloud. And so that got us through really a couple of years. And then my son, who was gifted, but also had learning delays. Yeah. He was having some struggles. And so I would ask people that maybe had some credentials or, they knew about teaching kids with learning disabilities. Right. And so it was just a lot of research. But also observing my kids. I think that's the number one way you learn to teach them is by observing them. What do they like? What are they good at? What are their weaknesses? And then you try to fill in the gaps because you want them to enjoy learning. You don't want it to be horrible.
Right, exactly.
So what's the fun stuff? You know, well, my oldest kids were boys, so they always wanted the science books and, you know,
right.
To dissect frogs and, you know. But so we just started. And then I got involved with Christian Home Educators of Colorado, and I actually work for them now.
Yeah.
I volunteered in their office. A friend asked me to come help volunteer, so I did that. And so then I connected with some other homeschoolers, and I found out they had a conference, and so I started going to the conference. And I really, I mean, podcasts are wonderful. We learn so much from them now. But to actually go to a conference, I think, is super important because you get to the, you learn about what homeschooling is. The heart of homeschooling is loving your child and helping them achieve whatever God wants them to accomplish.
Right, exactly.
And you don't really hear that anywhere else in the world. You don't.
You don't. It's so true.
On TV. So I started going to conferences, and I loved attending those and learning from people who were homeschooling, but also who were gifted teachers. And so that's how I learned to teach things I had no idea how to teach. And interestingly enough, my husband took a job as a part-time college professor at the Art Institute of Colorado in Denver. And the architecture profession kind of hit a lull when the oil industry busted in the late 1950s. And so he had to learn how to teach. And so he would share what he learned with me. And together we kind of just moved through it.
Yeah.
But what we saw is that our kids were thriving. And my child that had the learning delays, and then the next son who was curious about everything but would always get into trouble.
Right.
They just spent their whole day learning, whether it was we were reading to them or working on a math problem or they're helping us cook or fixing a car. They were learning and like way more than the required 4 hours a day.
Right.
So we just kind of did what felt natural to us. And when I teach young homeschool parents, I say, what feels natural to you, especially if
that's
you have biological children, they'll probably be similar. And then when you adopt kids, that's a whole new ball game you got to learn about. So,
right. Yes, that's so true. I love what you said. It's just start. Know your child, learn as you need to learn, and then just be learning all the time. I love all of those things. I think oftentimes we feel like we have to have all of our ducks in a row before we can even start. And we never will, but just starting that leap, and giving parents the confidence that it will all come together. And that community that you were talking about is so very important. Because you grasp the bigger picture of homeschooling instead of, well, we're just making it through this year and seeing how it goes. But just grasping that homeschooling is more than just teaching school at home. It is discipleship. It's family. It's a family way of life. And if you can get into that community by attending a homeschool conference, you'll catch that vision in a much more profound way than just trying to do it and on your own, like you said, on podcasts and other things.
Right.
But yeah, it is so important. And that's why we're doing family retreats for our families too, because a lot of times homeschool conferences don't work. We need extra help. And so yes, that's an alternative way to get some homeschool community in there. So as you homeschooled more students and added your adopted children, so you kind of ended on that, how did you navigate teaching towards the specific learning needs of each of your children as you were adding to your gang and family?
Right. Well, again, we just sort of jumped in.
Yeah.
I think it was so helpful that I had a like-minded husband, and I know not everybody has a spouse or a like-minded spouse, but that was very helpful to us. And so we just jumped in and started doing things. And when we adopted two sets of siblings through child welfare. Mm-hmm. So a brother and sister came to us at the age of 5 and 7. And then mm-hmm. later on, we adopted a 1, 2, and 3 year old.
Wow.
Survivors.
Wow.
But again, our observation skills really kicked in. And mm-hmm. of course, some of them had some really frustrating behaviors that we had to work on a lot,
right,
in addition to just the basics of school. Several of them were in speech therapy or occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. And so we would learn from those professionals what was going to help them. And we said, you know, we're homeschoolers, so we're happy to do therapy at home. What should we do?
Great question.
Yeah, our speech therapist was especially great. She said, you know, there is nothing better for kids who have speech delays than to be around a bunch of older kids and parents talking to them and using a higher level of vocabulary. So just work on that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So my son, who's now 19, when he was 2, he started speech therapy and he could not talk at all. I mean, nothing would come out. He was in speech therapy for 5 years.
Wow.
And now we cannot get him to shut up. So it worked.
Yes.
So I think to learn from experts, and of course, sometimes experts is just in theory and not practice.
Yeah.
So you really want to learn from people who have gone beyond theory and who are actually practicing.
That's a great point.
And one of the great resources that I just loved was Dr. Karen Purvis's Empowered to Connect. And that's a great website if you have children that are coming from a stressful, traumatized background. And because it really addresses how to gain their trust so that then they will learn and behave, those kinds of things. And, you know, it wasn't easy and it wasn't foolproof. And my one daughter, it took until 12th grade for her to actually have her brain calm down enough that she could receive the information to master her math facts. So she finally learned math, multiplication and division as a 12th grader. But then she could learn how to write checks and other things. So everybody has their different level, and you've got to see the person, who they are, and not just force a box onto them. And
so
I think kids that have learning labels, whether they're biological or adopted or foster children, or maybe they're your neighbor's kid that for some reason you're raising.
Exactly.
You've got to see them holistically. And when are they having their meltdowns? What are the struggles for them? And then get help that you need. Like if a child is having vision problems, then take them to get fitted for the correct glasses. Maybe that's their reading delay. Maybe they have tracking issues. Find out how to help with that. And so it's important to not only learn for yourself about these things, but to learn from people who you trust, who know more than you do. I mean, I think it's really important that you know you can delegate some of the homeschool stuff.
Yes.
And one of the greatest assets to our homeschool is that we had our kids take piano lessons from a super beloved, trusted, wonderful, who was also a homeschool mom herself. And I told her one time, it didn't matter what she taught. I would just bring my kids to her house every day for a half an hour, or every week for a half an hour. Because my kids trusted her and they relaxed and they learned so much from her, just talking to her, but also piano, of course.
Right.
She would ask them about their day. And as we lived through our curveball seasons, which we had a lot, she was a caring person that they trusted. And her husband was too. When he retired, then he would talk to them when they went for their piano. And so I think it's real important that you, I think it's a leftist ideology to say it takes a village to raise a kid. But I think it takes community circles of trustworthy older, wiser, been there, know that, to work with them and to allow them to love your children as long as you feel like they're a safe and trustworthy person.
Right. Yeah. It's really building that network community for your family with people that click and get it just, you know, on the same level as you do. And we found the same thing, you know, it was families that understood, you know, if a meltdown happened, that was a meltdown. It wasn't behavior that was just bad behavior. But we were all on the same level. We were all, you know, had the same agenda. And when you, those are the people who, when you have your days, when you're questioning, am I doing the right thing? And, you know, and what about this child? You know, am I doing them a disservice? You know, we ask ourselves all these questions and those people then can surround us. They have eyes and ears into our homeschooling life. And I love that you point that out. And that was a great resource for you. Cause, yeah, a lot of people don't have it, and it's really hard to continue homeschooling when you don't have that support. So that's awesome. Natalie's watching on Facebook, and she said, hello, ladies.
Yes. Hi, Natalie. The other thing, I think it's important, and we've mentioned it in passing a couple times, if you can find a local, or even if it's worth a half hour drive or whatever you can handle for your schedule, a homeschool support group that's like a co-op base where, you know, people are volunteering, teaching different things, and the kids get together and they can play and whatever.
Right.
I think that that's a great place, as long as the families are trustworthy and, you know, like-minded.
Right.
That's a really safe place for kids who have challenges in life to feel safe, to feel loved, to feel respected, and also just to have fun.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes our special kids, just their life is so discouraging and they just are miserable. But if they can go play a fun ball game in a local gymnasium with some friends from the homeschool group who love them no matter what, I think that's a really important thing to do. And maybe you don't have a homeschool group, but is there a neighborhood group or a church or something that kids can just literally have fun, you know, play games like kick the can or tug of war or whatever. I mean,
Yeah.
Are you still there? I lost you.
Oh, you did? Oh, nope. I'm still here.
Okay. I'll keep rocking and see if I can find you on my screen.
Yep. Nope. I can see you. So, yep.
Okay, good.
We're good.
That's good. All right. So anyway, I just think that, again, that's that community support that's super important. And it's important for us as parents, but it's really important for our kids. You had the opportunity to meet my good friend who worked your booth at the conference.
Yeah, Ginger.
Yeah. And her daughter was in the same support group as my kid. And she had issues and my kids had issues, but somehow we were just able to, you know, just let the kids have fun together. And sometimes hers would have a meltdown. Sometimes mine would. I recall having to lead a meeting with one of my children sitting right next to me the whole time because she was not allowed to go anywhere. And yet everybody in the group just kind of understood that it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very supportive, loving community, and we just hope that more homeschooling communities can be like that. It's hard to understand disabilities, especially when they're invisible disabilities. But the more we talk about it and share and are willing to be open and with the community, the more that hopefully they would be willing to embrace and work with us. And yeah, I know we've done many broadcasts on that. So if you're having a hard time, definitely look at some of those resources out there. But yes, that those people end up becoming your best friends for life, just like you and Ginger. Because I've got a friend like that too. In Minnesota, we did more of a pod type of environment because our kids no co-op ever worked for us, and that sometimes happens. But yep. But still, you need community. You need to create that community. You need to seek and find out those people and pray for them, because God wants to provide them into your life. And yep, in whatever way they can. Leilani says hi from Facebook, saying, I love this topic. So thanks for joining us. We appreciate that. Yeah, so lots of curveballs just with starting homeschooling, navigating, and then adding in adopted children, which I know my family has 10 adopted. I have 10 adopted siblings. And that you just never know what's going to come out next, because they bring so much trauma and other things with them, even when they are young. And that does affect the homeschooling dynamics, life dynamics, all of that. So bless you for all that you have done for those children. They are very, very lucky to call you mom. So, you know, as a dedicated homeschooling family, and you've talked about this, your husband was really involved in, you know, supporting you, helping you teach. Can you talk a little bit about the experience with his death, and then just navigating the healing and transition for your family while you were home educating still?
Right. Well, yes, I can talk about that. And, you know, it's so important, and if there's any dads listening to this, it's so important that dads are really engaged with their kids. You know, we have a fatherless nation right now, with all kinds of horrible things happening because people have grown up without an involved dad who cared about them. And maybe he loved them, but he was either unable or chose not to give them the attention and upbringing that I think God really had planned when he created the idea of marriage in Adam and Eve. And so that's my husband was all gung-ho about homeschooling. And he, the 3 weeks before he died, he said to me, do you think we're supposed to adopt more kids? I just feel like we should have more kids. And I'm like, no. I tell you, he loved his kids, and he loved spending time with them. And he was a polymath, a Mensa level genius, an architect, a cowboy, and a farmer were his three job descriptions. He was the world's greatest dad, because everything he did, he wanted one of us to do it with him. You know,
that's awesome.
It was riding horses or going to town to get ice cream or whatever. You know,
right.
He loved being with his family. And so my kids just loved any time they got to go either as a whole group and go with him, or one of them would get to go on a special thing with him. And he was just so fun, and he was an excellent, excellent college instructor, and his annual reviews were just like, he's the best teacher ever. And he was, because he just made it a relationship. So Jesus and the disciples had a relationship, and that's why that model works. And that model works in our homeschool. So of course, so as my kids grew up, their dad became their best friend.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. But not when God decides, okay, he's done, I'm bringing him home. And so he died in his sleep of a heart attack at the age of 62. Wow. Absolutely unexpected. He did not fit the profile for anybody who had heart disease. And he just had a great week. It had been his birthday week. And thankfully, the day before he died, he'd taken all of my kids to Waterworld for his birthday.
Wow.
And I stayed home, I didn't feel good. And so they had this monumental day of just doing with him what he did best, you know, which is like the coach and the mentor and the friend.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just wonderful. And so then the devastation just, hit us like a train wreck. And by this time, my oldest was in his early 30s, and I had probably four or five homeschool graduates at that time.
Okay.
And so then five minor children. And so it you know, it was a huge curveball. And I love baseball. I can actually hit a home run in baseball. I want you to know.
Wow. But, we got to discuss that later.
Anyway, so this was a curveball we didn't see, but God did. And he knew it was coming, and he set us up perfectly. And I'm so grateful we were homeschooling, because we just could slow down.
Right.
And all of my friends, you know, rallied around us with food and whatever we needed. I mean, it was just so great to live in that community that we talked about. We
had help
when the devastation occurred. And, of course, a wonderful church and the people at CHECK all helped us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd like to say we were over it in a year or two, but we weren't. It was just, you know, it still is hard. The holidays are still hard. But what we were able to do is we just slowed down and we concentrated on reading, writing, and arithmetic. And we had farm animals, which were a great solace to everybody.
Yeah.
And we loved, we have tons of movies. We watched all the classic musicals, A Fiddler on the Roof, you know, all those. And we were just together. And we had money and savings, and so I didn't have to go back to work right away, and I could just be with my kids. And the older kids needed to do stuff with me and talk, and the younger kids just acted out, and they were horrible. A couple more were horrible. We had encounters with police and other things, but again, our community was just, they loved us, and they were helpful to us.
Right.
And we got through that season by just doing what we knew best, which was to be together and make learning an adventure and a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so my one son said it was so funny. He said, a year after Dad died, we finally got back to using actual plates and real food from scratch. Chicken and paper plate. But we just were on survival mode. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, my wonderful parents had raised a very determined young lady. And I just, you know, was going to get up every morning and just keep going.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things I did. I took a couple of trips by myself. I just had to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did start writing. I wrote my first book because I wanted the kids to all remember all the things they've done with their dad, but also then know about our grandparents. And so I wrote this 5-generation family memoir, and that was my coping. But it also was really good for the kids because they learned about people in our family that they'd never really heard about or known about. And I was able to tell them that there were a number of widows in our lineage who had to raise children in way worse circumstances. So anyway, it was really hard, but I survived, and God allowed me to now thrive. And, you know, I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't trusted in him. I mean, I just don't even know how we did it. And there's the summer after my husband died, I just don't remember any details except the kids did go ahead and show some of their animals at the fair. And I went to the Florida Keys in August and met one of my daughters there. And that's the only thing I remember for the entire year until then we had Christmas. So what I really got out of it was I learned about the trauma that my traumatized kids had.
I never thought about that. Yes.
And I understood about freeze and flight and fight because I want to do all those things.
Right. Yeah.
And so again, the thing about homeschooling is the parent learns so much while they're helping the children learn. And that was a season of us all learning about death. I mean, who wants to talk about death?
Right. We don't have that in our curriculum usually.
No. And, you know, we've seen death on the farm with our livestock, but the person that we care about more than anything.
Right.
So, anyway, that was a huge curveball, but somehow the Lord caused us to win the World Series, and we survived.
I don't remember
what the rest of the question was, but
Well, I just wanted, you know, to point out what you were talking about, that togetherness, you know, and a lot of times we can stress, I'm not doing enough. I'm not pulling the books out. I'm sure you didn't.
Yeah.
You were just in survival mode, like you said, but that togetherness that teaches things and how to press through circumstances that we don't expect, that, that come at us out of nowhere, that is a life skill that you just have to teach in the moment. And
yes.
And you did that. And your kids all learned through that experience. It wasn't that they weren't learning, just like you were talking about at the very beginning. You know, they were learning all the time. And just that whole mentality that, you know, you've had throughout your homeschooling life, it just continued because you had set that pattern, that pace, no matter what comes our way. So yes,
yeah, that's exactly right. And as long as we're together, we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm assuming, you know, you're still healing, you're still transitioning, and you just moved to a new place. And we were talking ahead of time before the broadcast just on, you know, decorating a new home with things that you haven't seen or didn't even know existed, and memories, reminders. And it's still teaching your kids too, as they see those things. Like you said, your son made a comment about just some things that you had done in decorating the house. Now having adult children, I didn't add this in our comments, but you know, those teaching moments don't stop, do they?
And the prayer increases.
Oh yes, yeah. So yeah, I'm living that one too. Yeah, so true. Yep. So you do what you can in the moment, and when we homeschool, and God still has a continued work for us because we're moms through our entire lives, through the entire lives of our kids, and that is our calling above all their callings other than being a child of God. So yeah.
And I think it's really important to remember that God loves our kids even more than we do, and he has a plan for them. He created them the way they came out into the earth, were born,
yes,
exactly the way he wanted them to be. And so we have to look to him as the master teacher to undo the onion or solve the puzzle of them or whatever it is, because who knows? He knows everything about them, every hair on their head, every cell. And he's omnipotent. He's omniscient. Right. And he sees it through all time in his miraculous, indescribable way. And so when we feel like as failures, because we are. I mean, we are.
Right, exactly.
We're not perfect. And, you know, even if you're a mental level genius, you still have sin that you have to work on.
Yes.
But somehow, if we trust him and we point our kids to him, he makes it into this miracle thing that we could never expect.
Yeah.
When we start at day one, it's a good thing we don't know what's coming.
Oh, yes. So true. Yeah.
Yes. When you get to my age and you start looking back, you think, oh, God planned that perfectly, you know?
Right. So. Exactly. Yes. So true. Yeah. Rob had said, I mean, we had started talking about dads so needed in the homeschooling arena. And you were so blessed to have a husband that was right next to your side and believed in it so much. I just want to encourage those of you out there that don't have a spouse that is supportive, be praying for them. Pray that God would change their heart, that would give them a way to see into the importance of their role as a father, as well as your helper. My husband struggled for a long time with that, and I just kept praying for him. And he's a great dad. It's just the homeschooling part just never really clicked until we hit the older years. Then he was like, oh, I can handle handle this. I think he just felt just very scared to take on a lot of that. And so they do. They're fearful just like we are. And to be able to handle that as a couple the best way you can. So.
Right. And if you're a single parent, you know, I totally understand at least part of your burden, because it is hard to be the person who is the parent, the disciplinarian, the provider, the scheduler, the homeschool teacher, the everything, the bill
payer. Yeah.
It is so overwhelming. I mean, it's a two-person job that one person is now doing.
Right.
And I, at this point in my life, I'm not interested in finding a husband. I'm quite happy with the one I had. Thank you very much. And so I decided that I had to just keep going myself as a single parent. And it can be done. And your kids can still turn out great. And but it is just difficult. And so, you know, rely on the Lord and make your needs be known to your inner circle. And I hope you
have a church that you go to.
Because I know the churches that I've gone to, the deacons and the elders and the pastors have been so helpful to me and so understanding. And what can we pray for you? What can we, you know, what do you need help with financially? And they didn't just immediately say, put your kids in public school because you can't do this, you know?
And so you
have to be in some, you have to have some sort of support, whether it's family or that community we talked about or the church or all three if possible.
Yes, that is so true. And just being transparent about your needs. And I mean, God allows us to have needs so others can give to that. They want to. They just need to know what you need. And then to just be able to share. So Sherry, you have a lot of experience, 28 years of homeschooling. What are your three most important things that you recommend parents teach their children and why?
That's a good question. You know, you can teach them the whole set of encyclopedias, but...
Yes.
First of all, I just think you need, if you're a Christian, you need to teach them your Christian faith. You need to pass on that. Yeah. I mean, that's the only reason I'm alive and living and not an alcoholic or whatever right now, because I know the Lord.
Right.
And I fell away in my college and young adult years, but I came back. And I think a lot of our kids, that might happen to it. But if you point them to Christ, then they have hope and joy and peace on this earth.
Right.
But they also have the hope and promise of eternal life in heaven with the Lord.
Yes.
And having experienced death three times in our immediate family, that's really important to me and my kids, that we know where those people are and we're going to see them.
So
Christian faith, number one. Number two is, I think you need to teach them character. They need to be loving. They need to be humble. They need to be responsible. They need to have self-governance.
Yeah.
And I don't care how advanced your child is or how delayed they are. That is the hardest thing, that they learn self-governance. But if they do that, then by the time they're 18, 19, 20, 40, they're financially responsible. They're taking care of themselves. They're taking care of their family. If they have one, they're
valued
in their workplace. This is just so important. And character is not anything really being taught that much in institutional school. And we can see the fallout of that.
It's anti-character, unfortunately.
So, the Ten Commandments of character, for sure. And then the third thing is, if you can teach your kids the three R's of reading, writing, and arithmetic, they then can learn anything.
Yes.
So I do think it's important to be a reader and be well read. I have a son, a number of my kids did not learn really to read until later elementary and even middle school. And my one son, who had the speech issues, did not learn to read till about he was 17.
Have one really close to that.
He's not ever one to pick up a book and read it, but he does read online articles that I send him, and he is you know, he is literate and he reads what he can, but he is very advanced in many other things. Mm-hmm. And then if you can learn writing, it's really important to be able to write, to organize your thoughts, to write to other people, to write documents, or able to read documents that other people have written. That's important for legal purposes.
Right.
Yep. And then to know basic arithmetic so that you can do daily things that are needed for adulting. Having a budget, you know, balancing your checkbook. If you have extra money, you put in investments, calculate your life. If you can, if your kids, no matter what level of IQ they have, if they can learn to do those things, which I firmly believe they can, then they'll soar in whatever else they are interested in learning.
That's good. Yeah. God, character, and the basics. Yeah. And you can learn the rest, like you said. It's all the other facts that that are accessible by the touch of a button, but can we discern them? Do we know what our values are and what should drive our life before we allow all those facts to get to come in and muddle a lot of things up? So awesome. I love that list. So you are an author, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your website and your resources and all of that, so our viewers know how to find you.
Sure. So I have a website, easy to find. It's just sherrymcminn.com. My name is spelled like Sherry Lewis that had Lamb Chop the Puppet. So it's S-H-A-R-I. And I got McMinn from my good Scottish husband. But I like to keep my name Howard in there. So when I apply to speak or do other things, I include my name, Sherry Howard McMinn. And my website has just kind of who I am. And I also, people ask me to speak at different things. So I steer them to my website. They can see. And it's not always updated, but the book section should be updated. And I have 4 books that I have published, and they're all have a Christian foundation, and they are what I would call a self-help genre. The Family Legacy of Faith, the reason I wrote Stretch Yet Unbroken is I want people to understand that it's a blessing to have an extended Christian family. It's what blessed me and kept me going when things, when those curveballs were flying right and left.
Right.
And then my second book I wrote is on adoption, and it's the adoption book that nobody else has the guts to write.
I love that.
It is 450 pages long. It is because it has 70 some chapters that are all on a specific topic.
Okay.
And the very first chapter is what the church should do about adoption, because they're not. And now that we are post Roe v. Wade, we Christians really need to walk the talk. And I hope that more people will consider adoption. It will change your life, and it is a huge sacrifice, but it is a tremendous blessing. Peggy, you met my youngest daughter, Madison.
I did, yeah.
She is just a joy. I mean, I am just so blessed to be her mother. And she was the one when my husband said, oh, aren't the three of them so cute? And I said, yeah, but she like has no hair. I don't know if I could love her. And God taught me I could love her. So the book is written, the adoption book is written to couples who are considering or have adopted or are in the thick of adoption. And it at the back of it, it has 70 some creative dates that you can take with items bought at the dollar store, because once you adopt kids, you can never leave home for a date.
Right, exactly. Yes.
And so how can you have a funny romantic date at home? Well, I came up
with that's awesome.
And my publisher, they only asked 2. They said, well, this is probably a little risque for it. I was like, okay. Anyway, but it's really fun. So you can read it from beginning to end, and it'll take you about 18 months, which if you do one chapter a week, which is how long it takes from the beginning idea of, I think we want to adopt, to doing the case study and getting the placement and everything.
Right.
And so you can start from the beginning, or you can jump right to the chapter, like you have a 14-year-old who's a chronic bedwetter. What do you do? And, you know, we have a good cop, bad cop relationship in our family. I'm just saying a reader, my, where one parent always is perfect and one parent always has to do the punishing and discipline. How do you, you know, get around that? So super practical, where the
rubber meets the road chapters.
And people that read it said, this is the best book on adoption ever. And it is. It's really good. And then my third book I wrote, it's called Make a Meal, Share a Meal. And one of the things that we didn't discuss, because it's a whole podcast in itself, is one of my adopted children was killed in a homicide. And we had to spend 2 years going through the court hearings for that. It was very difficult. And I thought, you know what? I got to write something, to, you know. And so I decided to write a cookbook. And it's a great cookbook. And it's for either big families who need, like, okay, our family takes two casserole pans to feed dinner. Or it's for a small family that wants to make double, and they'll take something over to somebody in their neighborhood.
That's awesome.
Church, because God does want us to share, and he wants us to practice hospitality.
Yes.
And my daughter that was killed, that the cookbook is a tribute to, she was a foodie. But she loved to share food. And one time she went to be a counselor at a camp up in the mountains. And as she was leaving, somebody was giving her a ride back down to our house. She saw the kitchen staff was throwing away casseroles of, you know, pans of food. She's like, why are you doing that? Well, our insurance won't let them. She said, well, I'll take them. And so she came home with like six humongous pans of burritos. And I said,
oh, wow.
And so what do you think we should do? She said, well, we should cut this up into individual amounts, and we should take it to our friend who's the single mom, and our friend who's the foster mom, and the friend of ours at church who I know they just don't get enough to eat. And isn't that just wonderful?
Wow.
She just had the joy of the Lord and a wonderful heart. But the great thing about the cookbook is it's super easy. Everything's really fun, inexpensive. Yeah. But there's all kinds of great farm animal photographs. So baby and turkey and baby calves. So it's worth it, the picture book. And then the last book I wrote is called Death, Where Is Thy Sting? And it's about preparing for your own or recovery from the loss of a loved one. And people say it's a grief guidebook. And so if anybody has had someone die, especially during COVID, or maybe there's somebody that's ill, or they have an ill child or whatever, I really recommend you read it, because first of all, I try to be transparent, but also witty when I write. I write about hard things. And so I tell people, just cry along with my story while you read this. I have guest authors that also wrote chapters. One friend of mine, her husband committed suicide. They had 11 kids. And another one had multiple miscarriages. And then a friend of mine is a sheriff, and he talked about when death is an emergency. It's just a really interesting, good book, and it can be used as a book study or for yourself or with the group. But all of it has a biblical foundation, so it points you to the Lord. You know, what does God say about this?
Right.
And so it prepares you for your final days, or the final day of your loved one, or if you have lost someone. And then that's my fourth book. So the fifth book, then I have two more books outlined: Fly High Butterfly, which is a devotional for young ladies, and Turn Left Past the Weeds, which is a small family farm book that my son and I are going to write together. But
what I'm
working on now is called Raising a Diverse Family in a Toxic Culture. Mm. And it's one mom's response to anti-God, anti-family. And so I'm working on that, and I hope I'll have that ready by my 65th birthday, which is February 1st.
Oh, wow. So I am. That's
I always
awesome.
Give myself a writing deadline. So.
That's a good thing, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so. And you can find all those on sherrymcminn.com. And again, like Sherry said, it's sharrymcminn.com. Well, thank you so much, Sherry. This has been just a beautiful conversation and full of so much wisdom and wit. I just appreciate you and how transparent you are with your story and just all that God has taught you through that. And what a blessing to be able to share your family with us for this hour. Thank you so much.
You bet. It's been my pleasure. And I hope that things that I've been through can help other people. That's the main thing. You know, you don't want your life to go to waste. So if I can help you, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So Julie kind of gave a good summary. She said, God, character, the basics. Love it. Love this, Sherry lady. So you got some new fans.
And the other thing is, I want people to always feel like they can email me. You know, I know how hard it is. You have issues with your kids or you're discouraged. And I just want to be a resource for people. You can connect
awesome.
To my website. Just email me. And what's said on email stays on email. And I'm just happy to speak blessing and encouragement into your life.
Thank you for doing that. That is such a blessing, I'm sure, to so many that may reach out to you. It's hard. It's hard being alone, and I know sometimes it takes a while to develop that community like we were talking about earlier, and just having somebody on the other side of even an email or a phone call, it makes a difference just to kind of help us press through. So thank you for being available. And thank you, all of you, for joining us. I have seen you popping on and off, and I know this is around your lunch hour, so we appreciate you, too, for joining us every week and making us part of your schedule as well as just your learning curriculum on how to homeschool. And I know it's summer, so that's why we try to keep our discussions to more stories and experience. I'm actually doing two broadcasts this week because I didn't do one last week. I was at a Johnny and Friends retreat last week and had to move this broadcast off. So on Thursday, same time, we're going to be doing a parent panel on finding your inner teacher when your child struggles. And so our partners at Iconics have pulled together a bunch of their teachers who are all homeschoolers. And so you're going to hear from all of them on just what their homeschool journeys were like, what they've learned. You know, again, we're sharing our stories. So you'll want to be part of that discussion in a couple days. And then we'll continue this throughout the month. And also we have blogs on our website where parents from our community, I actually approached a lot of people in our support group on Facebook and said, what do you think about sharing some of those moms on there that have some really good responses? We got blogs from them. So you'll want to check out our website and read some of the advice that they had to share as well. So those come out, the new ones come out on Wednesdays. So you'll see a new one tomorrow, but last week's is already up. So so yeah, lots coming out, just encouragement for you and hopefully some new advice, wisdom to get you ready for the next year. And we're just here to help. So thanks again, Sherry. I appreciate you and your time. And I'm glad the internet stayed on. Sherry dropped at the beginning, so we weren't sure how this was going to go, but God held it together and she made it through. So thank you all. God bless. And we'll see you on Thursday. We'll see you then. Bye.
Thanks.
A powerful prayer life does not require hiking a mountain to be able to hear from God.
God can meet us right in the middle of our busy lives to help, guide, and speak to us through prayer. I'm Christina Patterson, host of the Teach Us to Pray podcast, providing practical teaching and encouragement on how you can make prayer a natural and consistent part of your everyday life. I promise it won't require hiking a mountain, but you just might develop the faith to move one. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.